This week's episode of Infinite Canvas Ultra is sponsored by Midwest Action. Midwest Action is a record and tape label as well as a blog based here in our hometown of Chicago. Midwest Action showcases the best and brightest in the Midwestern music scene, covering genres of all types, from lo-fi garage rock to hip-hop, psychedelic rock, and more. For more information on their releases and events sponsored by Midwest Action, you can head to MidwestAXN.com or search MidwestAXN at Bandcamp. Midwest Action. Listen local. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and welcome to the end of Infinite Canvas Ultra's List Week 2019. On this episode, we are going to be recounting in both of our areas of expertise my top 10 favorite comic books of 2019. And what are you going to be talking about, Michael?
I will be talking about my top 10 video games of 2019.
Hopefully with this we'll have for each other and you, the listeners, some recommendations as to what books you should have been reading and what games you should have been playing the past year.
Hell yeah.
But now I have the whole new year to catch up on. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. And to start off this ending episode to 2019 List Week, I'm going to kick things off with my top 10 favorite comics of the year. Been a really great year. And before we started recording this, I was saying to Michael that pretty much, well, okay, so if I were to give a breakdown of my top 10 list, looking at this, it's a mix of things that I have raved about within the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. It should be a hint to some ongoing existing titles. There's probably two that you know exactly what I'm going to be having on this list.
Yep, now that I think of it, yes, I know two for sure.
Yeah, and things that I either just wanted to maybe check out on a whim and thought would be okay, and other things that just sort of completely caught me off guard and took me by surprise, and I'm really happy about that. Yeah. I'm glad that this year, I feel like a lot of the best material came from places expected and unexpected. It's a very consistent year for comics. But starting off at number 10, and this is the first of two entries that this author is going to have on this list. It's Tom King's Heroes in Crisis, his DC event. Hmm. It's a, I want to say, 8-issue murder mystery where
they're... What is it called again?
Heroes in Crisis.
Huh.
It's in typical Tom King form, it is depressing as all hell and very sad. I do think you'd probably like this book quite a lot, though, because it's of opinion of mine about Tom King and something that is very not popular among comic book readers, DC fans in particular, is his way of taking these characters that are, at this point, almost older than time themselves.
Right.
Mythological beings, basically, and just turning them on their head. And he does that so much in this one. I mean, the book is essentially about a crisis center, a secret one, in the DC universe that heroes go to after they go through a traumatic event in their superheroing career.
Huh. Is this something new? He made this up?
Yeah. Wow. It's him and
that's cool.
It's him and the artist that's going to be doing the Batman Catwoman book that comes out this year.
Okay.
Clay Mann.
Okay, yeah.
Mitch Gerrits draws, I think, issue 5 in this, which is also maybe the best issue
of course
of the series. So, crazy enough, this book actually follows mainly... The two main characters are Booster Gold and Harley Quinn.
Okay, if Booster Gold's appearance in Batman is any indication of what he's writing here, I am very excited.
Absolutely. Yeah, which is one of the biggest things. Since Michael and I were talking about this, Michael's been reading Tom King's Batman run, and he read the Gift storyline, which Booster Gold is the star of.
Yes.
And it's just an amazing 3-issue arc. Makes me... I already had like an appreciation for that character, but I absolutely love Booster Gold now. From Tom King's writing with that character, and it's a continuation of that, of Tom King taking that character in really different directions and really putting that character through the ringer. I can really not say much about this story without giving almost everything away, but essentially at this crisis center, at Sanctuary, a murder takes place while Booster Gold and Harley Quinn are visiting.
Of? Or is that a secret?
There's two characters killed, and I'm not going to say who they are. Pretty big characters, actually.
Is this an Elseworld story, or is this, like, canon?
It's canon.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I mean, it's
well, canon for now.
Yeah, it's something that you really have to read, and it has a very, kind of ending to it. But yeah, so a murder takes place while the two of them are there, and basically they're both, you know, suspect number one, or two, I should say, because Batman gets wind of this, Superman gets wind of this, Wonder Woman, like... They're all, you know, super distraught because this sacred place has been attacked and two of their friends have been murdered.
And these are all, this is a superhero crisis center, right? Like, yeah. Only for superheroes.
Only for superheroes. And there's so many great segments where each issue you maybe get like four profiles, like a direct profile with that character.
Okay.
And you kind of, it just kind of pops up out of nowhere in the story.
Like a full, like, synopsis of who this character is?
No. Or... Like, you're reading a story and all of a sudden it says Catwoman. And you see Catwoman sitting in a chair and then the next one, she starts speaking to you. And then it's a continuous thing.
Like a investigator?
Yeah.
Interviewing them?
It's essentially, you're privy to a therapy session.
That's cool.
With a superhero or villain. And
that's a very Tom King thing to do, I feel like.
It's like the character, it's like maybe you, the therapist, are like, who are you? And then they're just going on some tangent.
Cool.
Which I think there's really good bits where you just kind of are brought in middle of the way through what that character is saying, and that's all you get for that page. It's a really neat trick.
Yeah.
So yeah, that kind of pops up throughout it, but yeah, a lot of the major DC heroes kind of catch wind of the murder that happened, and it's basically Harley Quinn and Booster Gold trying to fight for their lives and prove their innocence. So
cool.
It's awesome. It's really great. I thought the ending, honestly, maybe could have been a little better.
Yeah.
Maybe, I think, honestly, the weakest ending Tom King has had for any of his books. And...
From the indication that you said earlier, maybe constrained by, like, DC's oversight, probably. Yeah.
I feel like if he had more free reign, and this was an Elseworlds tale, the events that happened probably just would have stayed, but you couldn't do that with this. That's all I'll say. So I think it is kind of hindered a little bit by like you said, DC's editorial, but it's still overall great. Just presents a lot of really creative ideas with the entire DC roster, and it's amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Does that mean Harley Quinn's identified as a superhero now? Or like...
Anti-hero?
Okay.
DC has definitely pushed that character in DC's equivalent of Deadpool.
Okay.
Heavily. Sure. So...
Alright. That makes sense.
Yeah. Right. That's also a thing too. I mean, that character in Tom King's hands, I mean, that's... Like,
probably totally different.
Maybe the best that character has been written since the animated series, actually. Right. So, yeah, it's really awesome. All right, so...
Cool to hear that. I feel like DC's had a lot of big event books this past year.
Mm-hmm.
They're still finishing up that Watchmen run, right?
That actually just finished.
Just finished, finally, after like 3 years. And then, like, Deceased was another one.
Yeah.
And, I feel like there's another one I just saw, or maybe there's been a number of like big Batman like spin-off books, like the Brian Azzarello one, and
which I actually just read that. Batman
is it good?
Damned. It's good.
Okay, because that's at the library, and I'm interested. I was kind of interested in that.
It's worth a library checkout. Sure. It's not worth buying.
Okay.
I mean, unless you really, really like Lee Bermejo's art in that.
I don't really.
In that. Well, actually, I mean, I admittedly like him quite a lot.
Yeah.
I own it. I picked it up when my local comic store had a sale, so I got it for like 30% off.
Sure.
So, and I really enjoyed the first issue because I had read that.
Did you have the Bat Dick issue?
I don't have it. That came through to my work, and I just like read it on a lunch break. But Yeah, I really enjoyed the first issue. It's very clunky. It's very much there's gonna be a book I'm gonna talk about on my list where you get a writer that's maybe of a bit of a higher caliber in comics, like Brian Azzarello. You get examples where you get a story where you get a writer like that and they just really run with the character that they're given. Or we get an example of like where that writer wishes they were doing something else. Like Batman Damned kind of just feels like a 100 bullets side tale, but it's really cool. But you could just tell that he just wanted to write 100 bullets, and it's kind of jarring for the book. Like it makes it just kind of, it's very clunky, but god damn, is the art good? The art is incredible in that thing.
I don't know if it's just, maybe it's something I just have to get more immersed into. I've never actually read anything with Liam Vermeil's art. Maybe it's just something, once I start reading something and get like involved in the story, and his art probably really plays well off of Azzarello's
It does.
story,
And it
so.
has this like realism to it that's really cool. So yeah, it's a very pretty looking book. It's an experience. So I would definitely say rent it out. I recommend it, but I just don't think it didn't make my top 10 list. But yeah.
There's another book I want to talk about, but that might be on your list, so
Sure.
I'll save that.
So the next two, I'm just gonna kind of like knock them out together. These are ongoing books that I don't really necessarily need to say much more of them, other than they're both still great. And well, one actually ended and it's great, so I might cover on that one more. So at number 9, Immortal Hulk, one of the most consistent, just amazing titles that Marvel has been putting out. It's really surprising to me that a character like the Hulk is basically gonna get a kind of legendary, iconic run now in this time. Like that's pretty awesome. Very unexpected, and I'm just so happy for Al Ewing, who I still have been meaning to read his work before this, because I feel like that maybe is kind of a gold mine that I'm sleeping on. But yeah, just incredible comic. I absolutely love that book. It's still great. And then number 8, again, Tom King, a second mentioning in this list, his run on Batman. It just concluded with issue 85. Cut short, sadly. Again,
So
due to
sad.
DC's editorial, and it's just such a weird fucking book. Like, Batman just as a whole, and especially in this last arc, like, it gets very weird, and so much to the point where you're reading an issue and you're like, that was the issue, but it's like it's still really good. Like it's still very enjoyable, and amazing throughout, but there's just it just moves it was moving at like a turtle's pace, but I mean that in a good way. Like it's 'cause every issue just was like so just thorough. The story was just told in such a complete way and just really turned the character of Batman into just something so human, which I feel like you just don't see that with that character anymore. Like he's just written like this kind of super cop, straight-laced guy, I never fail, like, and this is a Batman that fails. He fails many times in this run.
And a lot of the big emotional, maybe, like Dan said before, I've been reading through the issues through like the volumes, and I've gotten through issue 50 now. And like just a lot of big emotional hits in this series. I could see why maybe reading it bi-monthly, it's two per month, right? I could see why maybe, waiting 2 weeks to read every issue could be a pain, because there are some issues where you can definitely tell like not really much happened here, it wasn't so exciting, and I could definitely see a lot of Batman fans and DC fans as being really turned off by that. But I think as a
Which they
whole,
are, especially
like,
with that character, like
yeah, you can't.
you can't write that character that way to a lot of those fans, and it's really sad.
But I don't know, like reading through it right now, and obviously like I'm a fan of Tom King's work, and I'm more willing probably than what I would assume most DC fans maybe are to more inventive and creative takes on these, big characters like Batman. I think this book's incredible.
It's great.
It's the all the Catwoman stuff. I don't know how much she comes back into it in at post wedding. Yeah. You know, maybe she takes a smaller role. But man, like, there's a lot of great storylines in here, and credit to Tom King for being able to write these like short 2 to 3 issue arcs throughout this series, at least up to issue 50 where I'm at, where there's like these storylines. There's, you know, obviously a bigger, complete story that he's trying to tell through the series, but he intersects it with these smaller, shorter, like 2 issue, storylines, like something like The Gift, which was 3 right. issues. And, there's a prelude to The Wedding that's like a 2 issue battle between Joker and Catwoman. Those issues are phenomenal. And I really, especially with something like coming off of Scott Snyder's Batman, which was like always 6 issue runs, here having like those smaller 2-3 issue storylines is really fun. He's able to do a lot of crazy stuff, a lot of different stuff.
I'm glad you brought up Scott Snyder, because that's definitely something that I want to address here. This is also just such like a breath of fresh air from Scott Snyder's run, which was just had its moments, but was just filled with just so much kind of pointless bombast and stuff that never went anywhere. And
Scott Snyder can never write an ending.
He can never write an ending. And this is just, it's quaint when it needs to be, it's bombastic and crazy when it needs to be, and like you were saying about, like, you know, the 2-3 part issues, it's so great that it was plotted out that way, where you could get basically a side story, where you kind of just jump in and maybe read that, but it progresses everything along. Like, The Gift is very crucial to the wedding storyline in the comic. But it doesn't need to be. You can honestly just say, maybe you're just somebody that really likes Booster Gold. You want to read these three issues, which are, that's not necessarily a Batman story. It's a Booster Gold story disguised as a Batman book. And it's really awesome. You could just pick that up and read that. But if you've been following it the whole way through, it's just very gratifying. It's another layer to the overall storyline that just makes it really great and just so wide-reaching. And Tom King did great work, and everybody that he collaborated with, Michael Janin, Lee Weeks, who did some art,
Tony Daniel, even
Tony Daniel,
like, and I'm not a Tony Daniel fan really. Like, I've seen his stuff previously, like even his Batman stuff, and just kind of been like, yeah, it's very standard 90s, 2000s kind of, you know, big buff superhero kind of artwork. But the stuff that I've read with the Tom King run is actually, like, pretty phenomenal. He does The Gift.
Yeah.
And like, I think that art is superb.
It's great. His Booster Gold looks great. His Catwoman looks great. It's
Joelle Jones, her stuff is really awesome.
I almost forgot that she was part of that for a minute. She did a few issues, and I mean, what better artist to have for a Talia story, which is when she ends up popping up in the book. I mean, absolutely great. So yeah, no, and it ends extremely well. I feel like a lot of people are gonna hate the ending. I think I saw, for like pretty much all my comic news, I follow Newsarama.
They gave it like a 4, right, or something. Or I saw some big comic review site gave it like a 4 out of 10 or something.
Yeah, they basically just said it goes nowhere. Yeah. But it's the way that issue reads me, and I can't wait to talk to you about it whenever you get to it.
Yeah.
It reads as this, like, kind of analogy to me, because, like, the book opens with something, and then it ends with something, and it's just, yeah, I gotta talk to you about it.
Like, the whole series, or just, okay.
Not the whole series, just like, that the issue.
Okay.
Like, the beginning and the ending are the same, but, like, reading it, I just get this feeling that Tom King was kind of trying to prove his point with this run, because, like, I definitely feel like he has had a point to this, where it's, you know, just showing that, you know, this person, Batman, like this character that so many people idealize, like, he is at his core a very broken man. Mm-hmm. Like, he is very damaged. Yeah. And it's sort of him like talking to the people that it kind of like went over their heads, I feel, and I really love that.
Yeah,
it's essentially an issue where the loose ends all get tied up. Like, that's literally the issue. It's just a compilation of like loose ends being tied up, and it's great.
Cool.
It's handled so well. In some ways, even that, like saying that out loud, that almost kind of like reads to me as this sort of like slightly pissed off reaction from Tom King, where he's like, here's your last issue, I wrap up everything from my run in like a really neat bow, but kind of begrudgingly. Like, it's yeah. I like that about it.
It's tough. Still feels, I mean, right. He was supposed to have another, what, 20 issues mm-hmm. or something? And then to have it all cut short like that and short notice. Especially for someone who's writing, he's writing other books other places.
He's going to have another
of DC books.
He's going to have another massive hit for DC with both Batman, Catwoman, and Strange Tales, yeah. which is his basically follow-up series to Mr. Miracle. Yeah. So,
show it's him some sad.
Respect. I mean, it's so yeah. dumb. But, I mean, to his credit, with what I said, he manages to pull it off and make it a very satisfying end and just a great issue. So, cool. Gotta give props to that.
I'm very glad to hear that, especially as someone who's, like, trying to catch up and read through it all right now. It's good to hear that it sticks the landing.
Yeah, and I was really scared that it wouldn't because of DC's interference, yeah. but didn't happen.
Hell yeah.
I'm really happy about that.
Go Tom King.
Absolutely, absolutely. Number 7, another DC book, Green Lantern by Grant Morrison. That book technically started November of last year, but sure. you know, has been going continuously through for this year, so technically still a book from mm-hmm. 2019. It's great. I couldn't think of a better creative to put behind that character and actually make him interesting. Actually, it's not even so much that he makes Green Lantern interesting. He makes the world of Green Lantern really cool. interesting and expands on it in such a great way. And just it accompanied with Liam Sharp's art on it. It's very much a throwback to Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol, Invisibles days. Like, it's him at his weirdest. With one of DC's
Green Lantern,
quote unquote, biggest characters. Huh,
yeah, right.
yeah, like they just give him free reign. It's essentially a cop procedural, but with Green Lantern and him doing all the going on all these zany adventures. Because cool. like the way Green Lantern is written, he's basically just like a straight laced cop. He's not very likable. He's just like super serious all the time. But he's
Hal Jordan.
Yeah,
Green Lantern. Okay.
But he's pitting all these ridiculous scenarios where he has to like go to a court hearing for an alien monster and you know there's just these giant cataclysmic things happening in space. It's a fun read. Cool. Like, it's just, I'm a sucker for Grant Morrison. I absolutely love his work, and it's really great. Just to, it's a book where it's very obvious he's having fun, and I really like that.
I don't think I ever would have been interested in reading a Green Lantern comic,
yeah,
but now I am.
It's amazing. Cool. So my next two, we're going to give some love to Dark Horse, who had some very sleeper hits for me this cool. year. That, and I, when making this list, I'm kind of surprised they stuck with me.
I feel like a pretty under the radar, maybe underappreciated publisher. Like, yeah. They've been around. Like, they've obviously had some super huge hits. Mm-hmm. In the past, like, 30 years since they've been going, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like you don't hear a lot about them, so I'm glad. I'm really interested to hear what you got.
They seem to be pushing to being basically the middle ground between Vertigo and Image. Like, Vertigo in its heyday
sure.
and Image now, or in the last decade. So two books that I have from them are Berserker Unbound by Jeff Lemire. Which is an incredible book.
I mean, it's Jeff Lemire. Is it his art, or?
No, it's this guy, Mike Diodato, who, he was like a Marvel artist from like the mid-80s, 90s. His style is like very, like, you know, guys are big and women are drawn with like really, you know, ludicrous
figures.
Anatomy. And,
sure.
But it works in this.
Okay.
Because the book is about essentially a Conan the Barbarian knockoff who ends up uncovering a wizard, and the wizard transports him to modern day America in 2019. So the book is this, Conan the Barbarian type living in America now, trying to get back to his previous time.
All right.
It's really
That's
great.
cool.
Just it feels like just like an idea that Jeff Lemire maybe had kicking around for a while, and I'm so glad that it saw the light of day like
Yeah.
this. Because again, like the way it's drawn, it just completely looks like a Conan comic from the 70s, but it's this guy in modern times, in like the modern world. It's a
That's a cool
fun book.
concept. Yeah.
I really love
Jeff
it.
Lemire just has ideas for days. I feel like he's the most prolific comic book writer there is.
Seriously,
I feel like
it's
he's got like 4 books at all times at least.
oh yeah, and
And he's
for
got a DC book
everybody,
and a Marvel book and an image two image books, and now he's got a Dark Horse book.
it's insane that he has
Is Black
Descender.
Hammer
That's
a Dark
him. That's
Horse?
Dark
I
Horse
think
title.
that's two right there for Dark Horse. He's got Descender, or I
Yeah.
guess Ascender now, right? He just put out a book like Frog Catcher, is that what it's called? Like a
Yeah.
whole graphic novel he just released.
His toe is like dipped in every facet of the comics
That man is
industry.
crazy. I don't know how he does it.
It's
And he's
nuts.
always like at the top of his game. He's always everything I've ever read by him is great.
Absolutely.
At the least, it's great.
And you should definitely check this out. I believe it's collected now. It's only 4 issues. And yeah,
That's
it's
it? It's a complete run? Cool.
It's just a brief mini series that he obviously wanted to do, and it's so much fun. It's just a great premise, great art. It's
I feel
awesome.
like I maybe I've seen that at the library. If not, I'm gonna tell him to go order that for me.
Do
Totally interested in reading that now.
It's awesome. And then the other Dark Horse title is this book called Everything by this author Christopher Cantwell, who is also now writing a Doctor Doom ongoing series for Marvel. I've never read that, but this is there really is not that much of a premise to this book. It's very David Lynchian, and for more of like a comic reference, kind of like Daniel Clowes, like even the Daniel Clowes of Ghost World
Sure,
and
yeah.
Velvet Glove, Cast in Iron. It's just about this giant megastore, like megastore to end all megastores, that opens in like some small town in Michigan. And it's basically just all you follow a couple different people in the small town and just their interactions with the store. Some of them
Huh.
work at the store, some of them maybe have been screwed over in some way by the corporation. And the store is called Everything. So the name of the book is
That's
like the
great.
name of like, the key plot element. And just like a, say, like Twin Peaks or something, like there's weird shit happening in this town. Is it linked to the store? Who knows? It's a really fun read, and just like the art style is like just super clean and has this like very, just like friendliness to it, and friendliness when you're seeing like these very borderline gory death scenes
Uh-oh.
and like just crazy disturbing happenances
So
happening in this town.
it gets crazy.
Yeah.
From the beginning of that, I almost thought it was like kind of just like a slice of life kind of story where you're just following like these like normal lives of these characters, but it sounds more
Basically, like a scene in the book will be like it'll be like that for 2 panels, and then all of a sudden, like they'll get into like a horrendous car
Oh my
accident, or
God.
and it all benefits the story. It's all
Yeah.
followed together, but like I don't want to give away too much because it would kind of kill the experience of the book.
Yeah.
It's just yeah, it's a very creative, odd title, and I'm really impressed with it on every front. I think the writing is super clever
Cool.
and funny, and
Is
the
he the
art is
artist
great.
as well?
No, I'm blanking on the name of the
Sure,
artist.
yeah.
But yeah, no, Cantwell writes it. I think it's really good. I think it's definitely a book that should be a little bit more exposed
I will
and supported.
put that on my radar.
Yeah, it's really awesome. So that was five. Number four. Okay. I will say this actually, this top four, we got 2 Marvel titles and 2 DC titles rounding this
Okay.
out. And now this is the book that I would recommend to you more than anything on
All
this list,
right.
actually. And that is Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen by Matt Fraction.
Matt Fraction's doing stuff again, huh?
It is it is
Hawkeye better, for DC, or
it is like better than maybe the last three arcs of Sex Criminals. This book, wow. Like this book is so fucking funny. I have cried laughing at this. Like it is hilarious. It is just about
Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen. That's what it's called.
It is just about Jimmy Olsen, a modern 2019 version of Jimmy Olsen trying to be a social media star. And every issue is kind of broken down into segments. So it's like, you will soon find out when Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen does da da da. And it's like, sure, some kind of like clever title pertaining to like the next little scene. It's just all these bits, but it's an interconnected story about how Jimmy Olsen's family was at odds with Lex Luthor's family back in like the 1800s. Sure. So you get bits of that popping up out throughout the series. And then also you get Jimmy Olsen basically trying to get a big scoop, but he ends up getting kicked out of Metropolis and being forced to move to Gotham City. Oh. And him having to like adjust to that. It's just a straight up comedy book, and it's so good.
That's
cool. I think it's some of the best, and like it's really saying something, some of Matt Fraction's best work ever. The artwork on it is incredible. It's such a fun read. And it just always surprises me with every issue, because it just gets, the plot either just gets more convoluted, or it's honestly gotten even funnier as it's gone on. Like, it's just so good. So it's going to be 12 issues when that gets collected. Like, I would say that's an immediate buy. That is that's like one of the best comedy comics I've read.
Not even a library rental. I will buy that one. You're saying it's that good?
Buy it. All right. It's absolutely amazing. I think you would really love it, especially just being a fan of Fraction. Yeah. It's him at the top of his game. It's really good.
Has he done anything in a while?
I don't think he's done anything since Sex Criminals. Like, this is his first thing. Is Sex Criminals
over?
I don't even know.
I really don't know at this point. I feel like that book is supposed to have an ending that's coming out.
I think so, too.
I think.
Maybe it happened. I just fell off so much.
Right, yeah.
But again, like, this, I did not, I mean, I expected DC will like hold this. Them
to a good schedule, hopefully.
Yeah, it's been consistent. Good. There's been no delays with this book so far. So I feel like it's probably all done, thankfully. But, yeah, like, this is just such a rebound for him. Like, it's great, and it just completely caught me by surprise.
Yeah. It's like kind of he was a superstar at the beginning of this year, or this decade, and Matt Fraction has just kind of slipped away into, like, nothing.
Like, I don't know what happened. Like, did he just get lazy? I don't know if he just was him, like, pursuing all the TV options for Sex Criminals.
Yeah, I think, like, he and Kelly Sue DeConnick, right? That's his wife.
Right.
I believe that they start a production company or something. So I'm sure he was probably wrapped up in trying to create TV shows for all these different properties, which
none of that happened.
Know, who knows what's happening with that? Whatever.
Yeah. So it's good to see him back at it, and he just has not missed a beat. Like, he's great.
Cool.
And that book is amazing. Third one is definitely a title that I expected to land this high when thinking about favorite comics of the year, and that's Spider-Man Life Story by Chip Zdarsky and Mark Bagley.
Yes.
Such a great original superhero story, an amazing retrospective without being a retrospective on Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
It just proves why Chip Zdarsky is one of the best talents in the comics industry.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this one maybe 4 or 5 episodes ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really great book. It's one of the few books I've read from this year. And it is a really great quasi-retelling of all of Spider-Man's history, but through a very interesting premise where it's, you're literally following Spider-Man from the 60s to today, wherein Peter Parker literally ages through the year. Real time. Instead of,
every issue,
Peter Parker in 1960, when he was introduced, was 18, and today in 2019 he's still 18 or, whatever, exactly, similar age. It's such a great, I don't know if they've ever done that before with any, like, big character. I would love to see more characters. I think you could do this for every single character in the Marvel Universe. Absolutely. So, like, bring it to DC. Give Tom King Batman for, like, a full run or something. Like, that would be awesome.
Batman first be around in the 1930s. I mean, obviously, that book would... He would die.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, just, like, see Batman throughout different eras. It's a great premise. It'd be so cool,
yeah. I love the idea of this. It's a really well-executed story. And yeah, Chip Zdarsky... I haven't really read a lot of his stuff that written by him. Most of my appreciation for him comes from Sex Criminals, where he did the art. Mm. But he definitely has a lot of say in what that story is, I'm sure. But no, he's a strong writer.
He is, and he's been very consistent at Marvel. His Invaders run has been great. His Daredevil run's been great. Like,
right.
He's really killing it.
I want to read that Daredevil run at some point. I really want to check out that Howard the Duck run he did a couple years ago at some point.
That was amazing, too. That was his intro at Marvel, I love how it's paid off for him to get a project like this.
Yeah, super cool.
Absolutely. So my number two choice, this caught me totally by surprise. I literally bought the first issue just because I really adore the artist attached. And also, that being said, this is the best art I've seen in any comic this year. But the writer I've never was too good with on any project he's had before, but I'm talking about Dial H for Hero from DC, which is written by Sam Humphries and drawn by Joe Quinones.
Right.
Dial H for Hero is this really old DC property from, like, the Silver Age of, like, this... I believe in the original incarnation, it was probably, like, a young man who has access to this phone. It's like a rotary phone where he, you know, dials a number and he gets a superhero who, like, goes and fights his battles and...
He doesn't become a superhero. He, like, literally, like... buys a superhero, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, this is a modern version of this where it just miraculously... the run's not finished, so how he obtains the phone, I don't know. But, like, a young kid in L.A. Now ends up getting the phone, you know, getting the powers and is trying to adjust to it and, you know, just getting this kind of, like, responsibility that's being given with that. And it is just one of the funnest books I've read this this year by far. Like, every time I open it up, I'm just grinning ear to ear. It's just a spectacle. The art is absolutely phenomenal. The writing is hilarious. Just such a good book. Just such an unexpected surprise to, like, dig up a really old premise, an old character book that nobody fucking remembered, and make something really, really great out of it. It's just, like, you feel like it makes you feel like a kid every time you read an issue. Like, it just feels like a really good, well-written, animated series. And, awesome. God, I cannot stress enough, like, how great the art is. It's amazing. It's worth picking up just for that alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. That's definitely one that I need to check out when it comes to graphic novel form or, you know, trades.
Yeah, it's on issue 9. It's gonna be 12 issues as well. So that's cool. It's almost finished, and yeah, I think you'd really love it because it is just seriously just so much fun.
All right.
It's incredible. And then number one, going back to the analogy about writers taking a really well-established popular superhero property and really just giving it their all and trying to, like, reshape it and do really amazing and adventurous things with it. I'm talking about House of X, Powers of X.
Right, of course.
I would say is the best comic book of 2019.
Putting them both together in one.
Yeah, I mean, they basically are one series at the end of the day. Because I honestly, like, whenever you go read that, it is collected now. It's in hardcover. So you really don't have to worry about that. It's all there, but when you read it, like, read them both, because they really are needed.
How do you think is the best way to read it? I don't know how it's collected in the book, but, like, all of Powers and then House, or...
I hope it's collected this way in the book, because it's meant to be read issue one, like, one issue of House, one issue of Powers, and then so on and so forth.
Okay.
So hopefully the book has it collected like that. If not, that'd be really annoying, but,
The storylines kind of make sense in that way. You're saying, like, you read one and then the other.
They wouldn't make sense if you read it any other way.
Okay.
So,
interesting. Yeah, like, okay. So yeah, then it must be collected like that.
It must be. So, yeah, but just absolutely great premise. I don't know how no one's really ever thought about this with X-Men before. Just story in a nutshell. The X-Men have decided to create their own island distance from everywhere else in the world, so they could just live their own peaceful lives in a, you know, mutant kingdom, basically, much like Wakanda, but just for mutants. That kind of premise, and things go wrong. And
of course they do.
Basically what House of X is, it's, you know, you got sides internal who are kind of warring with each other and, you know, don't necessarily want to be a part of this. And then you have, like, you know, outside forces that want to, you know, infiltrate and still try to take out mutants. That's House of X. And then Powers of X, it's basically a story split up into three parts where we see 10 years prior to the events of House of X, the current day, House of X, and then 100 years into the future. And basically how the 10 years ago, like, where this the premise of House of X was set into motion, like, the plans of that. Basically just how all those things affect each other and are interconnected and what it could spell out for the future of the X-Men. And spoiler, it's kind of grim. Like, it's not, it's not good. So all that being said, like, it leads up to a very, satisfying, but kind of disheartening ending. Cause it's, you see characters kind of do things that are very selfish, and it's just it's really great. It just constantly keeps you on your toes, and it just turns X-Men into such a even more than once before, just interesting property, interesting world.
Mm-hmm.
Really reimagines a lot of characters and just introduces new concepts for that franchise that are really great. I really hope we get this for a while and it doesn't get written out or edited mm-hmm. out from like the status quo of X-Men books going forward. I feel like it probably will go on for at least like 2 or 3 years, but
Hickman is writing like a new series too still, or
he's writing the ongoing X-Men title.
Okay. And have you been reading that, or?
Oh yeah, it's still it's great.
Okay.
Cool. Unfortunately, Marvel has kind of taken the same release strategy with all of their X-Men books. So if you really like House of X and Powers of X and go on to read X-Men, issue 2 of X-Men, it literally opens with incredibly status quo altering event in the book that says it happened in X-Force issue 1. So like you would have
read the entire X universe of comics.
Right. So like I open issue 2 and I'm just greeted with this like disclaimer. It's like, this takes place after, like, I literally was like, what, that happened? Like, when I read it, and then it said it happens in X-Force 1, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I missed something that major because I was just like, I'm going to wait for X-Force to get collected.
Yeah.
So that's the only extreme example of that I've had so far, because all those books are on, like, issue 4 now. But, yeah, hopefully I don't continue with that, because they kind of, I mean, like, they are all really good from what I read of the other titles. I'm going to wait till most of them get collected and just buy the X-Men book. But, he's writing that, then he's co-writing New Mutants, which actually that's been kind of my least favorite of the current roster of books.
Yeah.
I think mainly he's just kind of there for, like, very minor parts of the script, and I think it's whoever else is handling the co-writing credits mainly doing it. But this book, this is, like, I am honestly shocked that X-Men fans are taking to this, because, like, I would honestly recommend this way more to somebody who likes East of West than I would a superhero comic.
Sure.
Like, that's basically what he takes, where he takes X-Men. It just feels like this extremely huge, very detailed story, and it's super satisfying. And, yeah, I just hope Marvel sticks with it, because, I mean, it's really good to see X-Men kind of being relevant again. And it really happened very well with this series.
Especially after the fallout from the latest movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm really glad to hear that. I'll have to be checking that out. God, I have so many recommendations now. So many comics to read. Why did I have to fall out of comics this year? But it sounds like there's a lot of great stuff. There's actually, there was one I wanted to ask about Last Night on Earth?
Yeah.
Did you read all the way through that? Kind of hold up? Or
I own issue 3. I haven't read it yet.
Okay. That's the 3 issues. But you liked the first 2, right? Like a lot?
I thought the first one was like one of the best part 1s. Sure. Like a mini series I've read in recent memory. I thought it was great. Issue 2 gets a little convoluted and kind of just like there's a little bit too many ideas being thrown around. It's good, but it just is not as strong as that debut issue. So I'm pretty worried about the finale.
Well, Scott Snyder.
Yeah, I should hopefully have read this like by the next episode. Yeah, so
I think I'll update.
But
is that collected in trade? I thought
that third issue just came out. It just came out. Like, okay. If anything, there's probably pre-orders.
Then I'm probably confusing it with another like big DC event book or something. Or
Batman Damned got collected.
Yes,
and that's also Black Label.
That's the Azarello one, right?
Yeah.
There was that one, there was the Deceased book, and then there was some other, like, big DC
I sort of want to read Deceased, actually.
I kind of do, too.
I hear it's good.
As, like, a fan of Marvel Zombies and yeah, just, like, the conceit of zombies in the DC universe, that seems like a cool idea.
Yeah.
I might rent that at some point.
Some people I've talked to whose opinions I very much trust on comics, they've said it's actually better than Marvel Zombies. Like, it kind of, like, takes a better approach with the story and is just kind of more satisfying.
Awesome.
But you know, I want to read that. But yeah, no, I'm fingers very much crossed on the ending of Last Night on Earth. Like, I hope it's good, but we'll see. But yeah, no, 3, like I said, just that I would recommend more than any others to you. Yeah, you gotta read House of X and Powers of X. Cool. It's like super crucial. Dial H for Hero and Jimmy Olsen. Like, yeah. Those are so good. Like, it's like so great on all 3 of those titles to see the big 2 like put out stuff that is, you know, of
original.
That quality and original and just, you know, just showcase so many original ideas and is just really risky. Like I said, putting Hickman in charge of X-Men, I feel, is a very risky move. And
yeah. But they've been trusting him for a long, long
time. They have.
A long time now, I feel. Like, the entire decade has been Hickman's Marvel, more or less.
Yeah.
Which is wild to me, having not really... I don't think I've ever read any of his Marvel stuff, but having read a number of his Image books, like, he is hefty. His books are grand scale, like, philosophical... heady books.
Exactly. And he doesn't lose that with the X-Men.
That's super cool.
Title. Like, that's what, like, one of the things that's just most shocking about it to me.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good to hear a lot of good comics this past year.
Absolutely. Those are my top 10 comics of 2019. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Michael's going to run down his top 10 video games of 2019.
Welcome back, everybody, to the final installment of Infinite Canvas Ultra's 2019 list week.
Oh, it's finally over.
Hopefully you're not sighing in relief. Hopefully you've had a fun time listening to us this past week.
And we've given you space.
Yeah, we've given you 24 hours per installment here, whether that be episodes or written content. Or
2 of them you had to read, come on.
One of them you had to listen to, and it was just music, okay?
Yeah.
Good music. But yeah, we're going to talk about some video games now. I'm going to run down my personal top 10 video games of 2019.
Excited to hear it.
It's an interesting list this year, I think.
Yeah.
I guess maybe not too many surprises, but just a very eclectic group of games here, I think. Starting out here, we're gonna give our number 10, my number 10, to Tetris 99.
Nice.
A game I feel like could definitely reach higher on this list had I given more time to it. I only played for maybe a couple of hours, but Tetris 99, for those who don't know, is a battle royale style, you know, PUBG or Fortnite style game, but it's Tetris. So it's you against 98 other players, all trying to be the best Tetris player, which is very hard. Especially just in this game. I feel like I can hold my own fairly well when it comes to Tetris, in some capacity. But Tetris 99, I think my best score was 7th place.
Wow, that's really high.
I think that's my best, and I probably lucked into that.
That's amazing.
I've never been able to crack the top 5, and I could never imagine even getting number 1.
So I think I remember you telling me you had 10 or 15
Yeah, I
once.
think I got 7 once. I don't take my word for it. My memory's not that great, and like I said, I only played this game for a couple of hours. But yeah, it's a Nintendo made. It's actually made by Nintendo and produced by them. It's exclusive only to their online service, but it's totally worth, like, even that, you know, the online service is fine. I don't really use it much. But if you were to just pay $20 for the year just to get Tetris 99, that's probably a pretty good investment in
Oh,
itself. This game is phenomenal. It's just one of the best video games of all time, one of the most quintessential video games, and making a cool, kind of crazy concept for it.
I'm glad you brought that up because it's like really great to see the Tetris Renaissance that's been kind of happening
Yes.
where you get these very creative, original ideas on. You know, one of the oldest and most beloved
Yeah.
games of all time.
30-year-old game,
This, and of
and
course, last year's Tetris Effect, which was way better than it needed to be. Such
yeah,
a great, great game.
yes. I think my personal taste kind of goes more toward Tetris Effect personally, just because I think that's a more mellow and just more kind of like you lose yourself in that game, whereas something like Tetris 99, I might jump in and play a round or two and then get disheartened and
It's kind of
never.
stressful.
It's super stressful. Like Tetris Effect is, it can be a tough game, but like even still, like if you get the lights off, if you get a good sound system or like headphones or something, you just get just invested in that game and you're just in it, and it kind of doesn't matter if you win or lose. Tetris 99, you're like, I'm gonna fuck these dudes up, and then you're like out in like your 70th place or something. But it's a super awesome game. I can't recommend it enough if you have a Switch. Yeah, Tetris 99, what a great inclusion in the pantheon of battle royale games. It's kind of like it's the joke of like, you know, when Fortnite became so big, it was like, you know, what are they gonna do battle royale next? It's like, you never would have expected Tetris to be the battle
No.
royale that would have been one of the best to ever be.
Absolutely.
But it's not the best battle royale on my list.
Oh,
We'll get to
no?
that later.
Okay, cool.
Number 9 is Gears 5. That is the 5th installment in the Gears of War series.
Not surprised to hear that on here. I knew you've been digging on that one a lot.
Honestly, I had no. Like, I wasn't looking forward to this game at
I
all.
know, yeah.
I never even played Gears of War 4. I didn't play Judgment, which was like kind of like a spin-off after 3. I really enjoyed the first 3 games in the series, like really phenomenal, you know, but they kind of were in, they kind of, you know, they definitely were in that era that like Xbox 360, you know, third-person cover-based shooter. They made that genre and they defined it, and they closed the book on that series with the third one. I was like, I'm good. I never really have to play another Gears game. But Gears 5 is like totally great. I really only played the campaign. I played it with my girlfriend. We did couch co-op together. It was her first time playing, and it was just a lot of fun to, I don't know. It's not like they're doing much different these days. Like, it's totally just another Gears game with like a couple enhancements here and there, but it's a totally, like, it's a genre that it kind of just holds up, you know. The third person cover shooter is just kind of fun to play around with, and it's actually got like a pretty effective story. Like, I thought the characters were actually really well handled. Yeah, it's a totally fine, good game.
It's
Like, you
awesome.
know, Not too much to say about that one. But my next one, number eight, is also actually a pretty big surprise for me. And that's Luigi's Mansion 3,
Nice.
which I actually just finished the other day. I had rented it from the local library. Man, I'm renting everything from the
That
library
shot
these
up
days.
really fast too, especially considering you basically just played that.
Yeah, I
That's
mean,
awesome.
yeah, no, Luigi's Mansion 3 is a really weird one for me, 'cause I think I had played like a bit of the first one when it came out in 2002 or whatever, when I was 6 or 7 years old. And I really don't remember that game too much, and I never played the 3DS one that came out a few years back. But Luigi's Mansion 3 is a really phenomenal, fun little Switch game. Like it's honestly a really perfect game for Switch, 'cause it's as far as what I can tell from the old Luigi's Mansion games, they were kind of more open world-ish, like kind of more like what I would assume is like Metroid kind of style, where you're able to go to like a you can like explore the entire mansion, right? With Luigi's Mansion 3, it's more level based, so you're working your way through. It's not a mansion, it's a hotel, whatever. And you're collecting buttons to use in an elevator. So each level you get a new button, so you can get to the next level of the hotel. And it's a totally just they're able to do this. They're able to make these levels like 45 minutes, an hour long. Like they're totally just like pop in, play a level, pop out, come back the next day or whatever, and it's just a super enjoyable time. It's funny. It's like one of the funniest games of the year. Maybe the funniest game of the year. Just all of Luigi's reactions. There's so many moments where he's just like peeking through a doorway, and like a ghost pops out, and he like gets scared. And there's a dedicated D-pad button where you can like call Mario's name. And it'll be like Mario, because like the whole conceit is that like you go on this like trip with like Mario and Peach and a couple Toads to this hotel, and it ends up being that the hotel is run by King Boo, and they trap all the other characters in these paintings, and so you're trying to rescue all of them, and so he's like Mario. It's so funny, and I love that it's there's a dedicated button where you can just like say it over and over again.
Just do that. That's awesome.
And it's also surprisingly one of the best looking games of this year. It's not like, it's obviously not like the most high fidelity. It's not like a 4K big like show-offy kind of game, but lighting wise, it's really stellar, which is surprising. There's a lot of and a lot of games don't do really good reflections and mirrors, but this game really plays well. It plays off of mirrors really well, and like actually the game, there's no camera control. You're like it's almost like dioramas where you're like
It's
looking
awesome.
into a room, and so there could be like a mirror in the back of the room that shows like a secret or something, or like you'll see some ghosts can only be seen in mirrors. It's just like super cool stuff like that.
That's a good
It's
touch. That's
also a very
awesome.
inventive looking game. Like there's so many creative things they do with the levels. So it's not just like every level is a different story of a hotel. Like it's not just like regular hotel. Like the sixth level, I don't know if that's actually right, but it could be like an Egyptian pyramid, and you're like literally in the desert, and like go into a pyramid in a tomb, and like the one of the last levels is like a disco.
It's awesome.
There's all these really inventive, cool, different levels that they put in there. Spatially, it makes no sense, but that's
Sure.
okay.
Doesn't
It's a
have
totally fun, awesome
to.
time. I can't recommend it enough.
Just want to play that game even more now. Like I really loved the original Luigi's Mansion when I was a kid. I thought that game was awesome.
I'll say it maybe. For me personally, it kind of wore out its welcome. It went on a little too long, but maybe that's just because I was trying to hurry to finish it in a week's time so I could get it back to the library. I would say like it only took me like 11 hours to beat, which is a totally fine run time for me, honestly. But I did feel like by the end I was kind of ready for it to end, because it's it, you don't really get I wish this game had more power-ups or something, or like more abilities that you got throughout. You kind of by the, you know, 2 or 3 hours in, you have like every ability that you're gonna get, more or less, except for like one late game thing that is introduced, but that you barely use. But no, it's a totally good game. Lots of secrets. Like I'm sure there's a lot that I missed that I could go back and do. It's a really, really great game, and totally surprised me.
Can't wait to play it. I'm glad that it ranked as high as it did for you.
Yeah, it was super, super fun. Next up on my list is Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Awesome.
Just a really great Star Wars story in a year where I've had kind of middling to very bad feelings about Star Wars. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is a Bloodborne-esque game, or like Dark Souls kind of action adventure RPG style game. Combat's really strong, and I've talked about it before. I still don't know if it's me or if it's the game that's like broken in terms of some of the parrying systems. Thankfully my girlfriend is not here to tell me that I suck at the game this time. But other than that, like I think this game is really great. Story wise, it's really strong. The characters are really well written. Mm. It has one of maybe the best ending of any game this year. It's like total fan service, but it's like the right fan service that I want.
Fan service you want. Rise of Skywalker wasn't.
We'll get to that when we get to our top 10 best films of the year.
I'm sure. Oh yeah, that's number one, right?
Yeah. No, it's number two after X-Men.
Oh okay.
Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is a really stellar game. Again, it's maybe one that kind of went on a little too long. This one probably ranges to like the 20-25 hour mark. But maybe it has a little too much backtracking, I would say, like going back to the same, planets that you were previously in. But, otherwise, like it was a really strong game and another great showcase for why Respawn is one of the best developers out there today.
Can't wait to play that one. That's definitely kind of on the highest on my list for games I want to check out.
Yeah.
For new games I want
to
pick up.
Sure. You still have to get to Titanfall 2.
That's true.
Respawn's best game.
It's true.
What a phenomenal game. Next up on my...
Before I buy it, for sure.
Yes. And a short one. So it's an easy, breezy, quick game to get through.
Yeah.
Number 6 on my list is Mortal Kombat 11.
Nice.
Man, what a... Just a strong fighting game. Maybe one of the best fighting games ever made. It's just like, everything feels really well balanced. There's a lot of great fighters and characters in it. They all feel fun to use, at least the ones that I had the opportunity to play with. This is, again, kind of like Tetris 99, is one that I didn't play too much.
Mm-hmm.
I played through the entire story campaign, which is probably, honestly, the best story of any fighting game ever.
That's awesome.
Not even just in terms of like how you play it, but like literally the writing and the story and the characters are all really well written.
That's awesome.
It's a really cohesive, great story, and actually has like some really touching moments, and there's like they do some really great stuff with Johnny Cage in it. Whereas like Johnny Cage has always been like, you know, this cocky, you know, asshole, like movie star,
right?
But this game, the story of this one is something to do with time. It's like there's like this woman god who can manipulate time, and so they've brought back like the 90s versions of these Mortal Kombat characters, but that's awesome. Like facing off with the current versions of them, characters who after Mortal Kombat X have like had children, they're older, they're more experienced, you know, they've grown up. And it's like there's a really great moments of like Johnny Cage now, who's like this like army veteran, like he's like this commander in the army, and like totally not like he used to be, and how he like sees himself as a younger like that douchebag.
Yeah.
Like it's a really fun moments.
That's
like that.
So cool.
Really great stuff with Jax. yeah, it's a really phenomenal story. For me, it's just like, I don't know that I have the time to put in an effort to put in for like actually becoming good.
Sure.
Like really good at it. My problem with like fighting games for a long time, and it's here with Mortal Kombat 11, is where like I don't really have a lot of friends who play fighting games, and so I can beat everyone I know. Mm-hmm. But when I go online, like I can hold my own in some ways, like you know, if people are like up to my level, like I'm like a moderate decent player maybe.
Yeah.
I can hold my own, but like then you just like, if I probably played today, like, you know, 6, 7, 8 months after the game came out, the only people playing today are going to be people who have been playing since day one, you know.
Right.
Like people who are just invested and putting all their time into this
are extremely good at it,
and I'm just never going to be able to. Yeah. I'm just going to get my ass handed to me over and over again, so that's not fun.
No,
but there is like a lot of great like side content even outside of the story. Story mode, there's really there's like the towers, which are like these like little like challenges basically that like give, it's like basically you against an AI, but they give the AI different sets, like different abilities, and like, or there's a different like rule sets, so like, oh, you can't crouch in this one, or you can't block, you have to fight, you know, and they do like really cool stuff with that.
Sure.
So there's like, you know, outside of getting my ass whooped online, there's definitely different ways to have fun with Mortal Kombat. Great game.
Yeah,
can't recommend it.
Another one that I really want to play. I haven't played Mortal Kombat in forever, but yeah, no, I really want to try that.
It's a great game. Number five, another sequel in a long running franchise, and that is Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Wow.
The Modern Warfare reboot.
I'm really surprised it's that high.
I am too, especially this kind of falls into the Gears 5 realm for me, where I haven't played a Call of Duty game in 5 years. The last one I played was Advanced Warfare, which I loved. But Modern Warfare, I didn't care about until like 2 weeks before it came out, or like a week before it came out, and like every, like all the reviews are really raving about it. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. I'll watch some videos, see what it looks like. Man, this game is phenomenal. Like, story mode is great. The story itself is, you know, it's pretty basic Call of Duty stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, that of warfare, you know, whatever.
Right.
But like the stuff that they do with like the missions, like the actual goings on that you perform, like it's a really inventive game. There's a mission near the end where you're kind of sneaking around. It's like totally in like darkness, it's like a nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sneaking around like this town, and this is actually like a really large map, like it's a really large level where you're sneaking to different houses while trying to not get caught, and then like each house you're kind of like breaching in and you know, silently taking out all these armed guards. It's like a really cool like Zero Dark 30 kind of level, you know.
That sounds awesome.
And a lot of that game is there's a lot of cool moments in the story mode, and as well as like a lot of more bombastic stuff, of course. But then like even outside of that, of course, the multiplayer is just as good as it ever was, like at the height of Modern Warfare, like 1 or 2, back in the day. It's like riding a bike, you know, it's just, I haven't played in a long time, but I'm just able to get right back in.
Exactly.
And everything feels right. And the guns all feel great. There's,
imagine the controls are pretty much
yeah,
the same.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. It's been the same since 2007. They've made a Call of Duty every year since 2007.
That's crazy. That's crazy to think about.
It's really crazy. And that's why, you know, you needed a number of years off. Like, that's why I stopped playing for a long time, is just because it got tiring.
Right.
But I'm so glad to be back. I haven't played in a while, actually. I played a lot when it first came out. I was playing a lot of the multiplayer. And they have a lot of really cool new modes. The gunfight mode, which is a 2v2 round-based mode where you're put into these really tiny condensed maps. And each team is given random guns at the start of each round, so you don't even know what you're getting.
Wow.
And then you're like, literally just, it's one, you know, if you get killed, you're done for that round, so it's 2v2. It's super exciting.
That's awesome.
And then they also included another mode that's like basically Battlefield. It's like 64 players, you know, you're dropping in and that's a lot of fun too. But just like the heart of the multiplayer, just like the regular 6-on-6 Call of Duty stuff, it's as good as it's ever been.
That's awesome.
Really great game. Moving on, number 4, this is where Respawn comes back, and where the Battle Royale game comes back, and that is Apex Legends.
I forgot they came out this year.
Yeah, that's an early one, like, I want to say March, and it was a game that I played so much when it first came out, like, me and all my friends, and it was another one that kind of came out of nowhere. I think they actually announced it like a week before it came out. Mm-hmm. It was like they announced it and then it was out basically. And it was just such a breath of fresh air for a genre that even, you know, PUBG is like 2 years old, I think. And Fortnite is like a year and a half old, but like they had just gotten so stale. And I had, like, no interest in playing any game like that anymore. And then Apex Legends comes out, and it just revitalized the whole genre for me. And that's a lot due to just how great of a developer Respawn is. And these are ex-developers from Call of Duty, from, like, the height of Call of Duty. And, like, Titanfall, it's obviously a lot. It's actually set in the Titanfall universe, and it has, like, a lot of the same weapons and the same, like, movement and just the way you move throughout these battlefields. Apex Legends is maybe the best version of the Battle Royale game for me.
It's awesome. And I read that was set in the same universe as Titanfall. That's really cool.
Still hoping one day that they put the Titans, the big mechs, into Apex Legends. I think that would be something that would get me back in. I've come back to it fairly recently when they did the second season, which I think was maybe October-ish. And it's good. Like, it's still good. And I'm glad that they're keeping up with it. And I have a friend who still plays it fairly regularly. And, you know, he says that they're still keeping it up and adding new stuff. But, you know, at this point, I feel like I've kind of just dropped off of it. But that's fine. Like, it was a great 2 months where I was, like, playing this with friends every day.
Yeah, you're talking about it a lot. I never unfortunately hopped on the wagon with that, because usually it's like games like that just kind of are my preferred, you know, this type of game. But
yeah,
I'm glad that it stuck with you to the level of day, because remember, you're like I said before, you were so hyped about it when it came out. And
yeah, it's just a really good version of that. I love the idea that it's like always three. There's no like solo version of it. It's always three teams of three,
right?
And well, I mean, they've done like solo queues in the past, but like for the most part it's typically three person teams at all times. And they do some really great stuff with characters. So there's like something with like Fortnite and PUBG where like everyone is on the same playing field, everyone has the exact same abilities, but here every character has different abilities and different specials, and it just works. It just works so well. Like, there's so many cohesive abilities that work, like, really well hand-in-hand between these characters, and if you can get, like, the right team going, like, you know, the right team cohesion, it's really fun.
It's awesome.
And just even outside of that, like, some stuff that they've done with mechanics in the game, like, very rudimentary mechanics where, like, you know, if you're not on the mic, you know, it could be hard to speak with a team in games like this. But with Apex Legends, they do some really smart things where with a tap of a button, you can, like, point out, like, hey, there's an enemy over there, and it will do it in the game, and it will have a marker for everyone else to see on your team, like, hey, there's an enemy there, or hey, I found this gun here, I'm going to ping this gun and you can come over here. You know where it's at. Come find it. You need this, you know.
That's
like
awesome.
It's like really smart things. And I know like Fortnite has totally ripped it off and taken it back into their game. It's like really smart ideas like that, that I can totally see going into every kind of team-based shooter for like ever.
That's
from
awesome.
Here on. It's just like really smart stuff like that.
Yeah.
That elevates this game above and beyond every other kind of game like this.
That's awesome.
Yeah, moving on from that, we're going to give number 3 to Ape Out.
Hell yeah.
Ape
what
Out
a great game.
is the most stylish and just like immediately viscerally exciting, cool game and of this year.
Definitely a game for music nerds.
Oh yeah.
Without a doubt.
The music nerds game of the year for sure.
Absolutely.
Ape Out, for those who don't know, it's I believe only on Switch and PC, but it's a totally perfect Switch game, and I've actually been playing it a lot recently. I like got back into it to try and finish off the last few levels.
Yeah.
And it is a top down, it's almost kind of, I would best describe it as, if anyone knows, like Hotline Miami. Mm-hmm. Very visceral, just short levels, and you play as this ape. Again, it's top down, and you're moving from like point A to point B through these levels that are just heavily guarded with all these enemies that you have to kill to get, you know, get to the end.
Right.
And it's a very simple formula, like gameplay-wise, but what is makes this game so special is it's one, its art style, and two, its music.
Mm-hmm.
So the art style is very Saul Bass, like old 60s, trying to like come up with like a
Art Deco kind of,
yeah, like Art Deco and like very like matte, almost like colors that like there's no detail on anything,
right.
Really, everything is just like a straight up, you know, you're the ape and you're like this yellow ape and all the enemies are like these colors, and it does some really great stuff with titles, like, so each level has a title and it has like a little title card that'll show up that like always has some cool, like, little special effect with it.
Right.
It's just a really smart-looking game.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant from a design standpoint. It looks,
yeah,
so great.
And then on top of that, the music for this game is all AI-generated. It's this jazz, like, freeform jazz drumming and, like, some, like, horns and stuff. And it all forms around what you do in game. So like there'll be like a simple beat that'll come up when you start. Excuse me. As you start a level, it'll have like the simple beat that forms, and, you know, it'll have like a little drum pattern. And then as you kill enemies, which you're basically the only thing you can do in the one action you can do in this game, or there's two, you can grab enemies and you can throw them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you throw an enemy and they hit something, there'll be this big cymbal crash. And it is just like the most, like, just, it hits that right part of your brain that just feels,
yeah,
great, you know?
It emphasizes your hits.
Yeah,
so much.
And then as you go deeper into a level and as things get crazier and there's more enemies on screen and you're throwing guys at this and you know, everything's kind of going off, like the drums just like just the tempo just upbeats, and it's like getting crazier and crazier. It's so smartly done. It's really such a phenomenal game, and it's really engaging, and it's again like perfect for Switch, where you can just like get in, play a level or two and get out, and it just you feel accomplished.
Absolutely.
It's also like a hard game. But it feels worthy of its difficulty, you know, where like it doesn't feel like it's slighting you or it's being mean, or, you know, you feel like you're getting better as you play naturally, organically.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a great game. I can't recommend it enough.
Little bits I've loved it. I've played of it. I've loved, like, I think,
yeah,
it's amazing. You brought your Switch over shortly after that game came out, and I thought it was incredible. It's definitely something I gotta grab soon.
And it's always on sale. It's only like $7 when it goes on sale. Regular price
deal
is $15. Like even at that price,
yeah,
I would totally jump on it.
It's worth it.
It's a really special game, and unlike anything else, really. My number two game is very much like something else, and that's because it's a remake. We're going with Resident Evil 2.
Nice.
2019 edition.
And I think I know what your number one is.
Yeah, you're going to know what number
one
is. Resident Evil 2, the original, is probably my favorite Resident Evil game. I'm a sucker for those old original tank control style Resident Evil games, PS1 era stuff.
Mm.
But Resident Evil 2, the remake, is... well, now, actually, my favorite Resident Evil game, I think.
That's awesome.
And what a it's crazy because Resident Evil had some a number of off years with Resident Evil 5 was okay and Resident Evil 6 was like awful. And they've had some games in between there, but like with Resident Evil 7, they really came back to the roots of the horror genre and like what they were doing with the first one, and it was first person. That was a really great game.
Mm-hmm.
Resident Evil 2, this remake is like the best amalgamation of like Resident Evil 4 style third person action, but with the horror elements and like the zombie stuff that you really want from a Resident Evil game.
Right.
All into one. It's, bless you, it's one of the best looking games I've probably ever played. It just looks just so fantastic. All the characters look great. The zombies look phenomenal. There's really good like deformation when you shoot them or attack them, like body parts, you know, start like fall, you know, flesh falls off and stuff, and you'll see like little holes through zombies when you shoot them.
Probably detailed.
Yeah, super detailed. And it's, yeah, it's just, what can I say? It's Resident Evil 2 again, but it's amazing. The, inclusion of Mr. X, which is actually, in the original Resident Evil 2, but was only, I believe only relegated to Claire's playthrough, and Mr. X was kind of, a character that I believe that would show up a couple times, but here in the remake, he's through both playthroughs, whether you're playing as Leon or Claire, which are the two main characters of this game. And he's like this perpetual you can't stop him evil force that will follow you through the entire game, basically. And so this game that takes place in this this police station, you'll just hear footsteps, like these loud footsteps, and you know it's him coming, but you don't know if he's coming from that door or this door, and it's just... It's one of the scariest games ever just because of this one character who you can't stop.
Yeah.
And he is just so terrifying.
That sounds very terrifying.
It's so good. Yeah, this is really a special game. I can't wait. They already have Resident Evil 3. The remake comes out in April, I think. So the remake for 3, which is honestly one of the lesser Resident Evil games. It's not really like that well loved, but I'm totally in for seeing them do another remake of that. Like
this level of quality,
hands down,
it's fun to play.
I'm definitely there day one. It's Resident Evil at its best, this new one. And finally,
here we go.
We're going to get to my number one video game of the year, and that is Control.
I knew it.
Of course.
It's the one that I've played this year.
Yeah. Is it actually the only one?
I think so.
Well, I mean you've played like a bit of Ape Out and Tetris.
Yeah.
But
like actually played
Control. Yeah. I guess that's actually the only one.
Great game.
Control is...
Good God, that game is so strange and I love it.
Control is like if David Lynch made a video game.
It is.
Of. Like it's very Twin Peaksy. It's like X-Files meets Twin Peaks.
Right.
But it's one of the most fun third-person shooters there is. And it's a totally different game than something like Gears 5, which is very cover-based. And, you know, it's a lot of, like, sitting in cover and popping out and shooting a guy and then going back into cover. Control is, like, all about giving you, the player, like, as much power as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is so great at... Well, I'll say this. I think the game is a little slow to give you these powers, almost. Like, the first, like, few hours, you feel a little, you feel a little underwhelmed with what you have at your disposal. You, like, have a gun and maybe, like, a force push, basically. But as you go along and you're getting more of these powers, like a shield that you can pull up and you're able to... well, at one point, it's all shown in the trailers, so it's not that much of a spoiler, but at one point you're basically able to, like, fly and levitate, and it is, once you get to that point in this game, it is, like, a turning point where you're just, it is just so much fun.
It's great.
It is so much fun, and on top of that, this game has a really great story, it has a phenomenal setting, and great characters throughout. I love the main character, the woman that you've play as Jesse Faden, and her story I love what's the guy, the doctor's name? I'm blanking on
Oh,
the
yeah.
doctor. I'm blanking on his name, but
I'm totally blanking as well,
he
but yeah.
is maybe the best character of the year. So basically, the conceit of Control, which we've talked about before, but I'll go over it really fast, is you're this woman, Jessie Faden, who she comes to this place called the Federal Bureau of Control, which is basically the FBI, but for paranormal activity. And she ends up there, and it's supposed to be this building. It's the oldest house, is what it's called, and it's this building that is supposed to be unknown to any regular civilian. So like, even if you walked past this place, you just wouldn't even notice it, basically. And the inside of the oldest house is like this never-ending, like constantly iterating and changing. It like changes its own rooms. Like they'll form new rooms, and stuff around will just like move and everything. And you go there, and you basically become the new director of the FBC because the last director killed himself for whatever reason. And you're trying to figure out like what the what the whole mystery of this place is. And you're also trying to find your brother, who it turns out you learn pretty early on that you have been, as a child, you were involved in this otherworldly event that happened in your small town, where like everyone else disappeared except for you and your brother. And it's just this game where there's so much going on in the story and the writing, and there's a lot of collectibles that you'll find, like these written documents
I love
that are
those.
so enriching and just have so much value to them. It's like one of the only games ever where I'm like fascinated by the writing of like these extra side notes.
Oh,
Like nothing else I feel like I've ever real like Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, I would pick up a note and I'd be like, fuck, I don't fucking care,
yeah. Yeah,
like
it's always
whatever.
usually just useless, but
Yeah.
this, it adds so much
It
to the
adds so
world
much to the
and the
world.
game.
And yeah, there's so much to pick from there. There's like allusions to previous games by Remedy, including like Alan Wake, which the one of the DLCs for this game is actually going to like tie Alan Wake in to the Control universe, which is so fucking exciting for me as a huge fan of that game. This is like Remedy at their best, which Remedy has made, like I said, Alan Wake, and they also made the Max Payne games. This is like a great melding of like the story and kind of setting of Alan Wake, which you would probably actually like. It was a very Lynchian kind of thing as well, but more like horror, whereas this is like, X-Files kind of weird, like sci-fi
So
stuff.
it's kind of more in line with Control, like from a stylistic
Yeah, so
standpoint, because
it's like that, but with the fun. Like Alan Wake isn't the most fun game to play, whereas like the Control is kind of like the great story and world aspects of Alan Wake paired with the fun, just enjoyment value that you can get from like a Max Payne.
sure, because I mean, you definitely get element, because like Max Payne's kind of the only introduction I have to Remedy is the first one and the second one. I played those when I was a kid when those came out, and love those games a lot. Those games are awesome, but like you do get like a little bit of that, but it's just way more wide-reaching in its scope and with what it tries to do. So that's cool that Alan Wake is kind of in a similar vein.
And it's really great. Alan Wake is it's its own world and everything, and it seems really disconnected to this, but how they wrangle that world into Control is just, it's like
It's
mind-blowingly
awesome.
awesome. And there's like stuff that they do with Alan Wake in some of those notes, and they like touch upon that, and I'm very excited for the DLC that's coming out later this year. I really don't have enough great things to say about Control. One thing I would say is that the console performance when it first came out was honestly bad, where it would just have frame rate drops all the time. Like whenever you were facing more than like three enemies on screen, you were playing at like 15 frames a second. It was miserable, and I played through the entire game like that. But
It's insane.
from what I can tell, they have patched that, and it's
I've had no problems with
yeah,
it, like at
I'm
all.
sure it has some dips, but for the most part, it seems totally fine. And at this point, you have to play this game. If you're a fan
Absolutely.
of 3D third-person shooters, of good stories in games, this is a game that everyone has to play, I think. A great standout for this year, and one of the best PS4 games, honestly.
Absolutely. Overall. Absolutely.
It's just such a unique and an interesting game.
Definitely.
I love it.
I do too. But it's at the top of your list.
Yeah. Lots of great games this year.
Now I gotta go and play all these other ones that you just brought up in this list.
And I'm gonna have to go read all those comics.
Exactly.
That concludes my top 10 video games list. You want to tell everyone what we're going to finish out this week with?
Yeah, we're going to actually take your list. Not so much top 10 list, but thoughts and opinions on 2019 from our listeners. So stay tuned. Hello, everybody. We've come to the close of Infinite Canvas Ultra's retrospective on 2019. And this time for Q&A, we're doing something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. We're getting you in on the fun, and I got a few lists submitted to us this week, and we're going to read them off from listeners of the show. So the first one's coming from Jose, a frequent question asker on our
best
show.
Best question asker.
He sent me his top 5 films of the year, and his are at number 5, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, number 4, Knives Out.
Okay.
Number 3, Uncut Gems. Number 2, The Lighthouse. And number 1, Parasite. Sounds kind of similar to...
you said 3 Lighthouse, 2 Uncut Gems?
2 Lighthouse, 3 Uncut Gems. That's more in line with mine, actually. Yeah, which is kind of weird. But nice to see Knives Out mentioned here.
A lot of people really, really love that movie. I've heard a lot of people say that's their favorite movie of the year. It's totally fair.
It's a, good pick,
it's a great movie. And apparently Ryan Johnson is in the making of writing a sequel. A sequel with Daniel Craig's character, continuing his adventure, I guess. Which, honestly, make that movie. Give me the continuing adventures of Detective KFC. I can't actually remember his name.
Right.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I got a couple comments from Garrett. Garrett said his favorite movie of the year was Amazing Grace, which is a documentary that I honestly had not heard of until...
That's the Aretha Franklin one?
It is.
Yeah. I remember seeing like big ads in the theaters for that, like big posters for that one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just... I don't know that it's actually a documentary and more just like a live recording of like a show she
That's
did,
right.
I thought.
Yeah, because I was talking to someone and they said that it's it is primarily just footage of her performing, but it's done in this very different way, sort of like where there's a lot of close-ups, and I feel like it's from what I remember, I think the person told me that there's a lot of shots where it's kind of on the stage and you're around the band playing, and it's very
intimate.
Very intimate when it's like not supposed to be, which is kind of interesting.
I remember I actually saw Garrett say something about that, and I looked it up because I was like, what's Amazing Grace? Let me look that up. And then that's when I remembered, I was reading up about that, and it's like actually an interesting story where that movie was originally supposed to come out in the 70s when it was originally shot, but something happened with the audio and it was never captured right, and they couldn't edit it together with the film to be one in one,
right.
So like it was always out of sync. So after 40-something years, they finally, whatever process they had to do, they finally were able to patch it all back together in a cohesive way so that the audio synced up with the film.
Wow.
And I think it coincided with some kind of anniversary. I don't know if it was, the anniversary of the date it was recorded or what that was. I don't know. Was it maybe the death? Is Aretha Franklin alive?
I believe she's passed. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe it might have been like came out with her the anniversary of her passing. But yeah, it seems like a really interesting, great look at one of the greatest, most influential artists of all time. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's really cool. Something I need to check out.
Exactly. Yeah. Same here. And thank you for the recommendation. And then Garrett also said favorite TV show of the year, I Think You Should Leave, which is one of my favorites as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Definitely one of the best comedies. Yes. Comedy TV shows of the year, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad someone sent in some TV shows because we didn't really talk about that.
Yeah.
Obviously, neither of us too heavily involved in watching television, but
a lot of good stuff this year. Yeah. Big shouts to Barry season 2, season maybe just all of Watchmen. Mm-hmm. Definitely my favorite TV show of 2019.
Yeah. I want to shout out Jeopardy. I watch a lot of Jeopardy. Season 2 of You was really good.
I've never seen any of that. I
don't know if it's necessarily up your alley.
Okay.
It's a little... I really enjoy that show, but it's kind of like a guilty pleasure almost.
Sure.
But a lot of people really do love that show. I think it's good. I had a lot of fun with the second season. Trying to think what else. The few episodes of Rick and Morty I've watched have been really
Rick
good.
Rick and Morty, or half the season of Rick and Morty, was very good.
Don't necessarily want to shout out The Mandalorian, but that's the only TV show I can really think that I've watched this year, and that show's okay.
It was good.
I definitely want to watch Barry. I definitely want to watch Watchmen.
Yeah.
Chernobyl. I just need an HBO subscription. That's basically what I'm saying right now.
I mean, for Barry and Watchmen alone,
yeah.
Plus Curb Your Enthusiasm is coming back in a couple weeks.
Really?
So.
Couple of weeks?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I believe it's back January 22nd, so.
Damn, that's very soon.
Get HBO.
I honestly didn't even know they were making another season.
Yep.
Huh.
John Hamm's going to be in it.
I'm in.
I know how much you love John Hamm.
I'm in. I fucking love John Hamm.
John Hamm, Fred Armisen.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Thanks for sending that in, too, and I'm glad to hear someone else shout out. I think you should leave. That show is just... one of the funniest things I've ever
seen.
So
fucking funny.
I can't wait for season 2, which hopefully will be out this year.
Yeah.
And then, wrap things up, we got a top 10 list from Kyle of albums, actually.
Oh.
Number 10, Pup, Morbid Stuff.
Good pick.
Number 9, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, Infest the Rat's Nest. That's a very good pick. Love that album. Number 8, Lingua Ignota, Caligula. That was an album that was on my top 10. Number 7, Floating Points, Crush. A great electronic album. Really nice to see that on this list. Number 6, FKA Twigs, Magdalene. Love that record. Very, very good. Number 5, Thom Yorke, Anima. Great record.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4, Lightning Bolt, Sonic Citadel. Another great record. Number 3, Show Me the Body, Dog Whistle, which is a great album. That was in my top 5. Number 2, Tyler, the Creator, Igor.
Mm-hmm.
And number 1, JPEG Mafia, All My Heroes Are Cornballs.
Are you sure you didn't send this one in?
It's a very very similar to my music taste
I'm
list.
I'm almost certain every single one of those is in your top 30, except for maybe one.
Actually...
I think only one of those is not in your top 30, unless I am mistaken.
That Floating Points
yes.
album and the King Gizzard album.
Yes,
neither of those are in my top 30.
Wow, that's very similar taste right there.
Yeah, that really is. But
respect.
I'm proving to you this is an actual person.
That says from Dan Fiorio
no,
to Dan Fiorio.
Thanks
to everyone for sending stuff in.
Absolutely. We got a lot of listeners with great taste, it appears.
Yeah, no one said Joker in their top
10.
No Star Wars, no Joker.
I'm gonna go on record before this year closes out. That movie's pretty good, actually. I have rewatched.
That's not
it.
What you said when we recorded that podcast.
Because I saw it again,
man.
And it actually, it's a lot
better
than we gave
time?
It credit for. It really is. There is this podcast that I really love that talked about that movie. And kind of just, like, thoroughly dissected how much more that movie is really about just sort of class struggle, economic struggle, mental health struggle. And I kind of walked back in with that lens. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not, obviously it's not in my top 10, maybe not even in my honorable mentions, but it's a fine movie.
That's all right.
I enjoy it.
That's all right.
I enjoy
it. A lot of people really love that movie.
It has
I'm
its flaws. Todd Phillips is a very problematic person, but I'm totally fine with that movie.
Of course, we had to talk about it one more time.
I have made peace with Joker before the year was up.
That's
fair.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's okay.
But no, it grew on me.
Well, let's not leave on a bad note. Let's say that it was a great year for a lot of other great media.
It absolutely was.
Lots
it
of great video games,
year.
Lots of great movies, comic books, and music. As well as some good TV shows.
Yep.
And whatever else you can think of.
Absolutely.
Books? Real books? I don't know. I don't read those. There's probably some good ones. I don't know.
I read comic books.
But, yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening in and joining us for our week-long 2019 retrospective.
Hope you guys have enjoyed it. And, yeah, tune back in next week.
Yeah.
Same Infinite Canvas time, same Infinite Canvas channel. We'll see you later. This week's episode of Infinite Canvas Ultra is sponsored by Midwest Action. For more information on their releases and events sponsored by Midwest Action, you can head to MidwestAXN.com or search MidwestAXN at Bandcamp. Midwest Action. Listen local.